Thank you. Thank you very much. And God bless America.
Pope Francis came to the United States as polls indicate more and more Americans have moved away from Christianity in favor of atheism, agnosticism, and other religions, including Islam and Judaism. And yet, Francis appeared to stir awake, if not a sudden urge to go to church, at least some sense of spirituality among Americans who seemed captivated by his presence and words. That prompts some thoughts about how an increasingly secular society identifies and practices its values when the Pope's not around. And culture commentator Sherry Parks thinks the pageant of professional football has a lot to do with it. She joins us to explain on Midday After the News.
Ha detto non ti dimentichi dei poveri. E quella parola è entrata qui. I poveri, i poveri.
Pope Francis visited the United States last week, speaking to a joint meeting of Congress, visiting the homeless and the imprisoned, celebrating Mass in New York and Philadelphia. Wrote James Carroll in The New Yorker, to a confused and demoralized public realm, Francis declared that responsible and creative action is not only necessary, but possible. He transformed the banalities of American media merely by being their subject. And yet the Pope's visit was to a country that is increasingly secular. According to the findings of a broad survey carried out by the Pew Research Center, over the last 7 years, the percentage of American adults who consider themselves religiously unaffiliated has jumped nearly 7% religiously unaffiliated. This was a Pew survey of more than 35,000 Americans. It found a drop in the Christian share of the population to 70.6% in 2014, and a decline overall to 173 million. And the main declines were among Protestants and Catholics. Meanwhile, the unaffiliated, who describe themselves as atheists, agnostics, or, quote, nothing in particular, rose to 22.8% of the American population in 2014 from an earlier 16%. Meanwhile, here's a contrast to consider: football. Football is such a dominant part of the national culture that 11 of 20 highest-rated TV programs last week were NFL games. 11 of the 20 highest-rated TV programs. That's according to the Associated Press. NBC's Sunday Night Football is the number one primetime telecast of the week on adults 18 to 49. Total viewers, adults 25 to 54, adults 18 to 34. Those are the key adult male demographics. And tonight's Ravens-Pittsburgh game is bound to achieve high ratings, as that rivalry always does, and even with, or maybe because of, the 0-3 Ravens being hungry for a win. I mention the Pope and football because Sherry Parks, Midday's American culture commentator, watched Pope Francis's visit to the U.S. with the nation's increasing secularism in mind. Last week's visit by the Pope appeared to stir awake, if not a sudden urge to go to church, at least some sense of spirituality among Americans who seemed captivated by his presence and his words. And that props some thoughts about how an increasingly secular society practices and performs its values when the Pope's not around. That's how I put it. Sherry Parks is Associate Dean in Arts and Humanities at the University of Maryland College Park and joins us from time to time to share some thoughts on our culture, how we live, what we think about, what we do. This is really interesting territory, Sherry. The Pope and football. And somebody tweeted earlier, yeah, but can the Pope cover A.J. Green, meaning of the Steelers? But you got to thinking about this first because of the Pope's visit.
Well, sure. But, and we all watched the Pope come, and this surge of joy and happiness across denominations. I mean, the media just lost any objectivity for a week. And yeah. I mean, people were gushing all over themselves. Verizon set up a Vatican channel so you could watch, you know, him get on the plane and get off the plane.
Every step.
Literally every step. And there was this, and you think, okay, well, where was this 2 weeks ago? And I think often we think of religion as a box. and that you're in it or you're out of it. And actually, theologians have been saying for a while now that Americans pretty much treat religion the way we treat everything else. We shop. And so there really has been this merging of spirituality. So Buddhism has made really strong inroads into American life. And so there, you'll get people who do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and they may not go to church. That really has diminished, that actually going to. But Americans, the majority of Americans believe in angels, for instance. And they're very personal angels. They find you parking spaces, and they, and, you know, and they win football games. I've always been confused by that, because wouldn't God be on both sides?
Yeah, both teams, both sets of fans have angels, right?
Right. And so But religion doesn't necessarily need to make rational sense. But people still have a need for something because it goes across culture. Anthropologists talk about things being universal when you see them in every culture. Every culture has this sense of something bigger than itself, some sense of shared values, some sense of shared emotions. And so the way I started to think about it and thank you for letting me do what seems like a very weird topic.
No, I think it's interesting. Keep going.
It's kind of like, I've talked before about mythology as a kind of a virus, that it goes down and it comes up, but it doesn't ever go away. And I think that's American spirituality is like that, and that we then embed it in other things. And I pick football. I think it's true of all sports. But I think it's particularly true of football because of the way I'm going to use this word, practice football. And I have to admit, I'm an agnostic with football. Mm-hmm. The only one in my immediate or extended family, so I'm kind of the odd person out. And yet, Thanksgiving dinner gets planned around the games. I mean, we actually say, well, you know, who's watching what game and, you know, mm-hmm. if that sort of thing.
As opposed to what mass are you going to?
Right, exactly.
What service are you going to? We'll plan dinner around
right,
that.
Right, yeah. Well, you know, who's watching what game? And there have been Thanksgiving dinners at some of my relatives' houses that have been done at halftime. Yes, it has. But I think football has a great deal of ritual attached to it, the tailgating, and a lot of a sense that it is, despite contradiction, better than the general society. I think we hold sports up to a higher standard. So that's why the scandals are bigger when they hit. Now, I've been an agnostic, I think, because I've always been around football players. I've always been at big sports schools and been friends with football players. I went to college with Lawrence Taylor, folks like that, and I taught Dominique Foxworth and Laquan Williams. So I've gone behind the curtain. And so I see the costs of football. So I've never been able to just treat it just as the spectacle, because right. I see what happens on Monday when you're hurt,
right,
and trying to hide it. But I think Americans do a lot with sports and other things that used to be the role of religion. And that's generally the point. So when the Pope shows up, and, you know, and of course, he's a wonderful man. I'm not anti-Pope. This comes out because it's already been there.
Because it's already
the
there.
Spirituality.
He's drawing it out because it's there.
He's drawing it out in a different way. And notice the way he didn't just do mass. I mean, he did some very public things. And the media is only now beginning to dig into some of the people he talked to and the things he said. But at the time, there was just this very seemingly healing. I mean, the quote you gave was that before the Pope got here, we were dispirited and confused, and somehow there was a healing aspect that came about that. And we know that spirituality and prayer, I mean, there's studies, some of them here at Johns Hopkins, that prayer and optimism are healing, and he provoked that. So I'm not saying that that didn't happen. I'm just saying that we were already pretty practiced at it.
With the Pope's visit, Sherry wrote to me in notes for this show, I have been thinking about how Americans practice and perform their values. In previous generations, the church was an important part of everyday life, not only for beliefs and values, but for community structure and relationships. Now there is a mix of church, sports, spirituality, secular, humanism. And for many people, according to the numbers that I gave from Pew Research Center, you can take church out of that, right? Mm-hmm. But certainly sports, spirituality, secular, humanism. This is pretty interesting, because when we did a show...
I like that, by the way.
What, that quote?
What I wrote.
It's very good. About a month ago, we had 2 hours devoted to religion, and in one of them, we got into a discussion about where moral guidance comes from, where right and wrong comes from, you know, the Ten Commandments. Did you need to be from a religious family, a Christian family, or whatever religion, to understand the what the Ten Commandments were all about, to embrace those basic rules of life, right? Or the Golden Rule. Is church necessary for that? But I think you're right. I think over time, most of those teachings came from preaching of the gospel, right, and drawing stories from them to provide people with guidance in their life, no?
Well, sure. And I mean, not just Christianity, but all religions, because right. the major religions pretty much say the same thing, mm-hmm. To be nice to people and take care of each other and be kind and think of something larger than yourself. And yes, I mean, going to, and really I am talking about the day-to-day practice of religion. So what does your day look like? What does your week look like? And I think sports and other things give that structure. They give that shared community. They give you a way to express emotion in public. And I have a
particularly true that last point about expressing emotion. Emotion that you otherwise might have only expressed in church at a funeral, baptism, for instance. Is that what you mean?
That's exactly what I mean. Mm-hmm. I read an article about Japanese weeping rooms where they go in, you go in, you pay your money, and they actually play sad segments of movies, and you cry in public in a society where you don't cry in public.
People pay to be in a place where they can weep.
We pay to be scared all the time.
The movies, right.
Yeah, and they say, well, this was wonderful because I was in a room full of weeping people. And at first I read and I thought, oh, well, this is very Japanese. And then I thought, but that's what a sporting event is. And I went to undergrad at Chapel Hill, and I was there during the Dean Smith era. And I don't know if you remember the Four Corners offense.
Oh, yeah.
And being in the arena, there was a rhythm. And Dean Smith had a narrative arc to his games. He would talk about games as beautiful. And when you got into the Four Corners, the energy in the room changed, especially if you were rooting for Chapel Hill. And so that kind of shared commonality is something you get from sports. And the idea of being able to be highly emotional in public. Phil Sorgel is a colleague of mine in the history department at the University of Maryland, studies medieval and modern religion. And he has a paper that says, you know, all this beautiful music and art that we associate with the church certainly was not always there. When it enters, it's when they began to lose people to more emotional, what we would call ecstatic religions. And so they said, well, we got to get them back in the pews. And I know, Phil, if you're listening, I'm slaughtering your work, oversimplifying it. But that's when that beautiful music and beautiful art comes, because they want people to have an emotional experience in church. And so church has long, in the modern period, certainly been about a place where you can have emotion. Well, if you don't go to church on Sunday, where does that emotion go? We are not robots. We have to have emotion. We need emotion. We know we have social brains. We love it when we can have emotion with other people. And sports, particularly football, I think. I think baseball is more contemplative if you're going to sort it out by religions. I think football particularly gives you a place to be ecstatic. You can do pretty much anything within the law at Raven Stadium. And nobody goes, who is that weird guy with the purple paint on his face who is screaming his lungs out?
Right. Okay. So let me give you this then.
Okay.
People will say, yes, I follow you. I follow you on this, Sherry, but football is, it's football. It's a game. It doesn't really mean anything. And it represents lots of money. It represents ultimately the worship of money. And I have a hard time when you use the word religion with a small r, associating my ritual of my support of football and that what's really an industry in America, professional sports, professional football, with you know, an attempt to connect to God, if you believe in God, an attempt to connect with my soul, with my inner spirituality. Is it?
Okay. You're going to get me in trouble, but I'm going to say this.
Right.
I am separating the corporate structure of football and the corporate structure of major religion.
Just as you have to separate being a Catholic from the corporate structure of the Catholic Church.
Right.
The
I mean,
Vatican.
Because, yeah. you know, okay. there's a great deal of money that transfers. There are people at the top, whether you're talking about one huge denominational church or at the top of the mainstream. There's a lot of money that transfers. I'm not talking about that. I mean, I could dig into that, but that's not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the worth in the day-to-day lives of ordinary people, despite, and it is despite. People in the church know that that's there. People at football games know that that's there. What they are saying is, this helps me to get through the day. This helps me to survive emotionally. This helps me to have a community. When you move to Baltimore, whether you're a Ravens fan or not, on Fridays when there's a game, your kid is dressed in purple. I gave my daughter a choice. She chose to wear purple. Why? I mean, and now she's an avid football fan, and people ask her why, because she's at a progressive women's school, and she says, I grew up in Baltimore. I mean, that is in some ways partly the city religion, and we have all kinds of pageantry. People fly flags on their cars, and everybody has rituals before and after the game.
So all this does for your soul, what the church did in earlier times?
Are you talking personally?
No.
For my soul? No.
One soul, in general. I mean, potentially, it is. I think that's what you're
saying. I think it does many of the things. I'm not saying that there's a God figure. I don't think the football commissioner plays the role of God. But I think the way people relate to one another, that sense of community, that sense of structure to their week, the rituals that they play, that sense of value, despite all of the scandals. I think the scandals in football draw our attention because we want to believe that it is fair and just. Many people are very eloquent about racial equality and sports. Now, if you dig deep into that, you see that there's a great deal of inequality. But that idea that when you walk onto the field, it doesn't matter what race you are, is something that is very dear to a great many people in their day-to-day lives.
And when we have scandals in the church, among the religious, the Catholic Church in particular,
there's a sense of surprise because it should be better than the general society. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that people would think that a priest and a quarterback are exactly the same thing, but I think they play similar roles in the life of a city, in the life of a family.
If you'd like to join our conversation with Sherry Parks in this hour, 410-662-8780. What did you make of the Pope's visit last week? I had a question I wanted to throw out there just in general to get some folks' impressions about the Pope, whether you're Catholic or not, especially non-Catholics or maybe fallen off Catholics. Please give us a ring. And do you hear what Sherry's saying? Do you agree with that? Do you get out of that experience, whether it's sports or some other activity, what would we call it? A connection to community, a connection to ritual, tradition that you need in your life to keep going?
And emotion.
410-662-8780. It's American Culture with Sherry Parks. Please give us a ring. Our midday email address, midday@wypr.org. We'll be right back. I wanted to read just a little bit more from this James Carroll piece in The New Yorker about the Pope's visit. This was really interesting. He refers to what the Pope presented as democratic liberalism springing whole from the heart of an unlikely Roman Catholicism. On a host of issues, he simplified complicated questions without trivializing them. To a confused and demoralized public realm, this is what I quoted earlier, he declared that responsible and creative action is not only necessary but possible. He transformed the banalities of American media merely by being their subject, and of global policies that kill, torture, starve, and debase, Francis said quite plainly, stop. And now listen to this. He says, no rock star, no president, no secretary general of the UN could do what the Pope is doing, and there's the point. Despite the broad secular assumption that the sun has set on the age of the papacy, the Vatican remains deeply integrated into the DNA of Western culture itself, with implicit significance for many people, whether they know it or not. The Holy See, with its, quote, names, battle slogans, and costumes, those are words from Karl Marx, is the last vestige of Christendom. the only surviving element of that religious, political, and artistic fusion to be found outside the world's museums. As the custodian of that legacy, the Pope draws on the energy of a hidden and ancient current.
We did not treat the Pope as a Catholic. We treated him as a holy man. I've been in the same room with the Dalai Lama and seen the same phenomenon on a smaller scale. But because he was the Pope, that was the... And think it. We've only had one Catholic president. Catholics are not a hugely dominant force in the American mainstream, differentiated from other denominations, really. So he wasn't treated as a Catholic. We didn't delve into much into the issues of Catholicism. He was treated as a holy man, and the public sphere felt, and I'm using this word carefully, blessed.
Really?
I want to know.
I am a Catholic, right. I think my perspective is a little different.
You're inside.
I'm inside the box.
I'm watching the Today Show and watching a Jewish Matt Lauer gush and fawn.
Really?
He's
a TV guy. What about normal, real people? Do real people look at this guy the way you're describing him?
I commute from the Baltimore area to the Washington, D.C. area every day. And I was thinking, oh, my goodness, traffic is going to be terrible. Do I take the train? Do I drive? There was very little traffic because so many people had driven in the middle of the night to get to the Pope. And you get not quite a million, but almost a million in Philadelphia.
So they couldn't all be Catholics?
I don't think they were all Catholics. Okay. No.
I wonder how the Pope plays on the minds of others, people who are not Catholic.
Well, and I think the messages, the ones that you just read, of very simple messages of being kind to one another, and he did simplify. And now we're kind of digging into the complexity of some of the things that he said. But the idea that I mentioned before, where the major religions converge, of be kind to one another and work for one another, is the message that he gave over and over again. I think it's interesting that, he blessed a lot of people who were, as people would say in the church, afflicted.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very interesting that the media has not circled back to those people to see how they're doing.
See how they're doing? Okay. Maybe they need a little more time than a week. Listen. How do you make the comparison?
I'm not saying that he's a fraud. I'm just saying I think it's interesting that the media that digs into everything else has not dug into that.
You mean whether people have been healed
from
the Pope's touch?
Yes.
Okay. Go back to football.
You're getting me in so much trouble.
You go back to football for a minute. for a minute. So you don't get these lessons from football.
Which lessons?
You
equality, fair play? Sure you do.
Well, is that what you're getting from the Pope?
To be kind to one another?
Yeah. You don't get that from football. I mean, that's actually, right? You're watching violence on the field. That's how a lot of people look at it and actually won't look at it anymore because of that.
Have you seen any of the Old Testament epics that have been running in the movie theater and on TV?
Yeah.
There's a lot of blood.
Yeah.
And so I don't think you can just pull that out. And then remember, I said I'm a football agnostic, so I'm not going to apologize for the brutality of football. But I do think the moral lessons of justice and fair play and take care of your friends.
Mm-hmm. Come from teamwork and sports.
Yes.
Interesting. Let's take some calls on this. Please join our conversation with Sherry Parks, 410-662-8780. Wayne in Baltimore. Step right in, Wayne. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
The comment was made earlier that when we get beautiful music and the vestments are very pretty, and when the kind of artistic quality of religion steps up, it's in part because of the church or religion is making an appeal to us. So I think it's fair to think about football and religion in terms of this appeal. And I wanted to suggest, going back to Aristotle, I'll try not to be too effete about this, but we're appealed to at the level of emotion, or what Aristotle said was pathos. And so, we dress up like Ravens fans and everything, and we get emotionally involved. It's similarly in church. We dress certain ways on occasions. We're appealed to at the level of ethos, which is character, the kind of quality of human character, the virtue that is invested in the people involved. So we see the star quarterback, the running back, the coach, and everything as embodying admirable virtues. We see the priest, we see other people in the church as embodying that. But it also is at the level of logos, which is what we take to be the truth, the kind of ultimate value, whether it's reason or whether it's revelation behind this. And I think what you were saying earlier is really true. You know, finally, the logos of football is late capitalism, and it's spectacle. And it's in the interest of producing a relation of the public to something we buy and spectacle in the way in which it distracts us. I mean, ideally, religion is an appeal to a different kind of a logos. It is of a different horizon of meaning and value than in truth. So I think that fundamental difference, I see the analogy, and I think it works at those levels of emotional involvement and involvement in what we consider to be virtuous characters within our societies. But I think the logos behind them, the ultimate value or the horizon of meaning is quite different.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think I agree with Wayne. That's the point I was trying to make earlier about, I think he stated it much more eloquently than I did.
And I actually don't disagree with Wayne, but remember, what I am focusing on is how it affects the people on the ground and their day-to-day lives. And if you look at the financial structures of many churches, it looks a lot like capitalism. But that doesn't stop people on the ground from it being a very important and useful and something worthy of respect in their day-to-day lives.
Something they need, rituals, a sense of belonging, values that they draw from it, something bigger than themselves.
And I don't mean to be disrespectful of that at all. I'm just saying that for me, if you think, okay, when people stop going to whatever their place of worship is, does all of that just drop away? No, it doesn't.
No.
Are they getting exactly the same thing? No. But is it doing the same work in their day-to-day lives? I still think yes. And I think that many people ignore. I've seen it in churches where, you remember the electronic church, where you know little old ladies were sending in their jewelry. I mean they were losing their lives' fortunes because it was so important in their day to day lives. I mean sometimes it is true and worthy, sometimes it's not. But the fact is, for those little old ladies, it did the same thing. See, I'm kind of sliding in between those two points.
I'm with you. One of the things that occurs to me that you might be concerned about is if the message from Francis is to take care of one another, stop starving people, stop torturing and killing, you know, be a true fraternity, work together, collaborate, take care of the poor. These are significant messages. They come from this holy man. I don't know where else we get those messages. Where do we get them in our society? The reason people are drawn to him is because he's saying things that our own politicians don't say, our own public leaders don't say enough. You certainly don't hear it from football players.
Well, I would take it a bit further and say he's saying things that some denominations are no longer saying. If you look at the Bible, and this is not original to me, and you put a hole in all the places where poverty is mentioned, you end up with Swiss cheese. Many denominations do not practice that anymore. So he was, in terms of the church, he was getting people back to the basic message. And again, I don't want to apologize for football, but that up from poverty message is very much a part of the football message.
Hmm. Okay. Touché. Paul in Baltimore, you're up next on Midday. Welcome to our show.
Hi. Well, thanks for giving me a minute.
Sure.
First of all, I think if I had a dinner party, I would probably want the two of you at the party. Just for the record, I love when the two of you get
together. I'm available.
So.
Yeah, what's for supper?
I don't know. We'll have to do one of your food programs, and then we'll come up with a menu. I just wanted to make just two quick comments. One, I think as it relates to the Pope, I think in the end, we just love authenticity and humility. And sometimes there are even CEOs of great corporations that we love who have authenticity and humility. And, you know, it's what Jim Collins would have referred to as, you know, the great leaders, that level five leader, that sense of, you know, humility in what they do and regardless of what their organization is. And I think the Pope just sort of loses that.
Yes.
And we love that as a culture. So that's one comment. The other thing, and this is kind of pointed at Sherry as a question, is I do appreciate your analogy, and I think it's great, particularly centered around ceremony, community, there have been times that we did not go to church on Sunday, instead went to a Ravens game, and it felt like church. So I get, in a very visceral way, what you're saying. But your analogy probably breaks down when life gets real. And I think you would probably agree to that. That, you know, if I were diagnosed with cancer today or I lost my son tomorrow, I likely would not consult the Ravens or pray to John Harbaugh or, you know, to Joe Flacco. But I would lean on my faith and that maybe God has a bigger plan for me. And there's something redeeming about that when life gets real and life gets difficult. So the football analogy is fun from a ceremony standpoint. But when it comes to the rigors of real life, I think you might agree it starts to break down. If you have a comment on that, I'd certainly appreciate it.
Actually,
very
I do.
Good.
And
excellent.
Again,
thank you for calling, Paul.
Yeah, because Dan agrees with you.
I know, it's like it. It's challenging.
No, I and at one level, I understand exactly what you're saying. And it's interesting because if you are football, we've been focusing on professional football. But if you look at the people who are playing football, the kids, and that number is diminishing slightly, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. When someone gets injured, there are rituals and support. And this is true of all sports. My daughter's an equestrian. When somebody falls off a horse and ends up in the hospital, there is it is akin to sitting shiva. I mean, the kids gather around and they're very quiet. And you know, sometimes that means watching the ambulance go by. And then they go to the hospital and they just sit. And it looks like bearing witness. And I think at that level, it feels very much the same. And then they go back out, knowing the dangers, and get right back on the horse. And since I've known football players on the ground, I mean, you know, I lived in the jock dorm at Chapel Hill for 2 years, and so I was a sister girl, because you don't date people in your own dorm. That idea of this is hard, we will get through it together, and sometimes we will come together in communion, is there, is very much there.
Also, what Paul was saying about ceremony and ritual, mm-hmm. and that sports provides that. It provides that, I think, for people in distress, one of those things that you go to because it's there. You know, turn on the Orioles game, or the Ravens game will be on Sunday. Go be with friends and watch this together. Also, I was really struck by what he said about authenticity and humility.
I very much agree with that.
Seeing authenticity in a great man, this holy man, the Pope, authenticity and humility, two of the things I really like in athletes. You know, when you act, for me personally, and when I admire an athlete, it's not so much always the athletic accomplishment. It's the accomplishment along with this sense of, this is a real guy, a real woman, a real, you know, authentic human being who's humble, right?
Yeah, and I very much agree with that. I think particularly as we've been watching, you know, the election stuff, and we've talked a bit about that, and watching Congress, to have somebody that big come and say, this is the list of important things in life, and the rest of it is fluff, was a very important message.
Sherry Parks with us for the remainder of the hour. You can join our conversation at 410-662-8780. Dan Roderick's here on Midday. Please give us a ring or write down your comments and send them in by email. I'll read them on the air, midday@wypr.org. This is more from the James Carroll piece. I hope you don't mind. I think it's relevant. Pope Francis embodies the mercy of a God with whom few, if any, believers still associate threats of eternal damnation. The dread of hell, on which the papacy so long staked its claim to power, is gone, good riddance. That means that salvation no longer defines the content of Christian hope as it once did, any more than secular hope dreams of being saved from perdition. Interesting way of putting that. Believers, like all contemporary people, wrestle instead with the threat of meaninglessness, the elusiveness of purpose and moral order, especially in the face of suffering. In truth, for many believers, the here weighs more than the hereafter. It's interesting.
Oh, no, this Pope talks about evil more than...
He does, and he's supportive of exorcism. Right?
Yeah, I mean, there's some aspects
that we... He thinks the devil is real.
There's some aspects that we've chosen to ignore.
Yeah.
That we, the larger we, have
yes,
chosen to ignore.
Yeah, and we also have not mentioned the Pope's visit with Kim Davis, the Kentucky County Clerk, you know, who took a stand against same-sex marriage.
His spokespeople said it was about freedom of religion, but he's a very smart man, and it goes beyond that, and it contradicts the idea of being kind and fair to each other,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, and I've heard from some friends who were very excited about his visit here to the U.S., pretty disappointed with this part of it. So, back to the phone lines. Please join our conversation here. Patrick in Baltimore, you're up next. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good afternoon, Dennis. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So you made a comment a few minutes ago about some of the things that Francis says and how, where else do you hear them in our society? And I totally agree with you on that regard. One thing that maybe local listeners might do to understand a little bit more about his message and where it's coming from, they can go to Mass either at Loyola College or St. Ignatius, both Jesuit institutions here in the city. And you might get a different feeling from that Mass as you would from a local parish. The Jesuits just have kind of a different approach and a different focus in their preaching. I was a student at Loyola and can say that the time spent in Mass there is certainly unique in my Catholic experience.
And could you describe it for non-Catholics who don't have that insight about the Jesuits, the Society of Jesus? What would you say about
sure.
that?
Sure. One of the interesting things that happens in Mass at Loyola, not all the time, but sometimes, is communion starts from the back of the church rather than from the front of the church, because one of the things that Jesuits like to talk about is how the least among us will someday be the first among us, and the last shall be first in the kingdom of God, which is an interesting way of thinking, I think, you know, an interesting interpretation.
And historically, the Jesuits are usually the first to go into dangerous areas. I mean no disrespect to say that they're often considered kind of the mavericks of
oh, yeah.
Catholicism.
There's no disrespect there. Yeah, I think they enjoy that. No,
I yet. Think so, too.
Also, was especially appreciative of the Pope mentioning Dorothy Day, a founder of the Catholic Worker, in his remarks to the joint meeting of Congress. Because that's another remarkable woman, really considered a radical in the
yes.
church, who
yes.
Her radical idea was to go and live with the poor and serve the poor, you know, Dorothy Day, and to fight against nuclear proliferation and a more peaceful world.
Well, I think
for more peaceful world.
I think it was interesting because I think Americans got a good long look at the religious left while the Pope was here, which is often quieter than the religious
oh,
right
yeah.
in public sphere.
Janice in Baltimore, thank you for holding. Welcome to Midday.
Hi, Dan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm going to have a slightly different opinion here. Let me preface my comments by saying my husband grew up Catholic, and I'm a Seventh-day Adventist. And I find it interesting that in the media there has been no mention of the fact that the papacy, that the Roman Church, takes full responsibility for changing the Bible Sabbath from the seventh day, which is clearly biblical. There's nothing in the Bible that sanctions Sunday worship. They've changed that from Sabbath to Sunday. And also, I find it interesting that the media has not pointed to the fact that the history of the Roman Church is abysmal when it comes to the persecution of Christians, and that the Pope calling himself Holy Father is blasphemous. We should not call anybody but God, the Father, Holy Father. I find that highly offensive.
All right. Thank you, Janice. Interesting perspective we hadn't heard. Also, I don't know if you caught it, the Ron Reagan ad on TV. I saw it during a CNN coverage of the Pope. As you said about the media gushed for all week long over the Pope. But there was an ad. Ron Reagan is the son of Ronald mm-hmm. Reagan. Is an atheist, and he was speaking for other atheists, saying that, I don't know if he used the word resent, I can't remember the exact words, but that they opposed or thought it was wrong for the Congress to invite the Pope in and for the leader of the Catholic Church to be speaking to a joint meeting of Congress, separation of church and state, citing that. And it was right there in the middle of primetime coverage of the Pope in America. Back to the phone lines. This is Saeed. Saeed, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. One thing that I haven't seen anybody talk about it is what Pope actually was trying to do is to remind every one of us that how dangerous religion beliefs could be, and try to let us know that there are some who take advantage of others by manipulating the religious beliefs. And he, I think, you know, as you know, every corner of his message was, be kind to poor, but who to be kind to poor? The one who has power and the one who can make changes. And I haven't seen anybody talk about it. And thank you again for taking my call.
All right, Saeed, thank you.
Through the course of human history, religion has been used for all kinds of things. I mean, as a defense for slavery, as for instance, in my family's background. I think the media did the gushing job while they were here, and we did not enter into a complex discussion or even a historical discussion about religion. Mm-hmm. I think that's true.
And the issue Ron Reagan raised in the ad, I'm not sure that was examined very much. The whole idea of the Pope being, it certainly was unprecedented, but was it appropriate?
I think we are still at base a Christian country, whether we say so or not, and the Pope made that clear. And I'm not, you know, I'm not attacking that or defending it. It's just based in history.
John in Union Bridge, you're on Midday Next with Sherry Parks. Hi.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. I just had one thought about the one gentleman mentioned authenticity and humility, and I thought that was really, really quite interesting. And then I thought of the Penn State scandal, and I wondered, you know, people just really support Penn State a lot. And when this happened, I just wondered the author what her view, if she looked into that football mania or whatever you want to call it, and how what she thought about that compared to, say, the scandals in the Catholic Church or fundamentalist church or so on. What is her feeling about those things?
Wow. Well, that's very interesting that he brings that up. I mean, think of the role of Joe Paterno in Penn State, or the role, his image, who he was, what he stood for all those years.
And how long they looked the other way. I mean, as a university administrator, I watched that pretty closely. And what I thought was interesting was the response of many students at Penn State, where they said, we still believe. We are still here. We are still with you, despite that. Mm-hmm. And it looked very much like someone who is staying true to their church despite the scandals, which we've seen.
Interesting. Milton in Edgewood, welcome to Midday. Hi.
Thanks, Dan, for another interesting show. Like another one of your callers earlier, I also love it when you have Sherry Parks on. I just sit
Thank
back
you.
And listen normally. But this time, because you requested non-Catholics and I'm one, and she mentioned, I think, something about the rituals and ceremonial way that we are. Well, I totally agree with that. We tend to want a rock star, and the Pope is one, but so is Donald Trump, right? And another angle is this. The message the Pope has, I think, Dan, you might have mentioned that, the message that he's been, you know, saying love each other and care. Jimmy Carter has been doing that going on 1,000 years. I mean, it's not like a fantastic. I watch the news, and the people's faces, they're crying because the Pope says love each other. I'm like, you know what? Okay, I think I'm not trying to knock the Pope. It's just that he's a rock star in the way we are, just like the football stars or any other athlete.
But look, Milton, listen,
I'm
you know,
sorry,
you
I'm
may, no, no, you're good. I'm glad you brought up Donald Trump, because think about it for a minute. The atmosphere created by Trump over the mm-hmm. summer with his comments, especially about immigrants,
right?
Contrast that with this other rock star from the Vatican, who was here. I mean, that's what people are looking for. That's why this emotion
because they're going to see that lady.
What's that, Milton?
And they seemed to be bothered with him because he went and had a visit with the lady who wouldn't give the license for the gate.
Yeah, Kim Davis. Well, I'm just saying that at the end of this trip, some people are disappointed to see him do that.
Well, I think
you get what I'm saying about sure. Trump. You don't hear people. You don't see people crying over Trump. Right?
Well, maybe at his rallies, I don't know. But I think the comparison to Jimmy Carter is really interesting because Jimmy Carter has struggled all of his career to explain himself, to explain. And the Pope does simplify that same message down to digestible pieces, for better or worse.
A better communicator than Jimmy Carter was.
I think so.
Poor Jimmy Carter. I always say poor Jimmy Carter because a lot of people just say the worst president we ever had. You know.
In some ways, he was pretty good.
Yeah. Pete in Baltimore. Pete, we'd like to get your comments. Go right ahead.
Hi. A prior caller talked about the role of religion where a person who's desperate or is in a real crisis, they would turn to religion. And I think one thing that is partly taking the place of that is kind of putting our faith in brain science and psychiatry. We don't talk many times about how we're desperate or unhappy. We say we're depressed. We've adopted the language of psychiatry to describe our feelings and describe our situation. And we tend to, when we're really, many people are very desperate, they go to a psychiatrist and they have faith that the medicine that's prescribed will resolve their problem. And this is a faith-based thing because actually even the head of the NIMH has said that the DSM diagnostic categories are not valid. They don't describe known conditions. And a Nobel laureate, the guy who invented the chemical imbalance theory, has repudiated, as has the former editor of the Psychiatric Times. So there's sort of a turning to the use of our synapses and our brains to explain our lives. When I get CEUs for professional education in the mental health business, and so many of the things that I see advertised are, quote unquote, brain-based techniques.
Pete, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we're getting short of time.
And I would like to leave Pete with just this thought that maybe there's no contradiction. That between psychiatry and religion, that they are pieces of the same whole, and how we think and how cognition works and how emotion works. And I don't think there's necessarily the contradiction that some people may think.
Jim in Baltimore, real quick, Jim, we're short of time.
Hi, am I on?
Yeah, just be brief, please.
Okay, I just wanted to say I've been thinking about this metaphor about sports and religion, and what is speaking to me in that is that it frightens me for our culture because religion, Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, all offer us complex stories that provide a guide and a pathway about how we might lead a life that's holy, however it's defined, whereas sports are sort of Darwinistic. They're about the mightiest person, the fastest person, the strongest person. And it doesn't really provide a story with a social order or protection for the weak.
I'm sorry we're out of time because we could go on from here.
And there are lots of sports narratives that do very similar things. Whether they're as good or are as mighty, I don't know, but they do similar things.
But the sport itself, the competition itself is about, the mightiest winning.
Yeah, but there are lots of narratives and stories.
Within it, you're correct. But we could have done another hour on this based on all these phone calls. So thank you, folks, for your contributions to this show. And thank you, Sherry, for setting up this conversation and all the other conversations we've had here on Midday over the years.
Thank you, Dan.
I'll miss you being in the studio with you. But thank you very much, Sherry. You've been great.
Thank you.
Sherry Parks, Associate Dean in Humanities, Arts and Humanities at the University of Maryland College Park. That's our show for today, folks. See you again tomorrow.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producers are Michael Himowitz, Melody Simmons, and Connor Graham. Our interns are Beatrix Lockwood, Adam Dronberg, and Aaron Morenzi. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.